behind the screen. There's a world of pure imagination behind the screen.
Hey everybody, this is Paul Goble. Welcome to the Paul Goble Show. Thanks for joining us. We're back, babies.
Yeah, right? Babies. Hi, babies.
Back after the holidays, and it's our special birthday show. Because why? It's Elvis's birthday.
Happy birthday, Elvis Presley.
Right? The king of rock and roll.
And of course, I would actually ask a lot of our listeners, if you can, because it is our friend Brian McNett's birthday today, so if you could go on his Facebook. Find Brian McNett's Facebook and wish him a belated birthday. That would be really cool. It's also my birthday.
Yeah, and it's Jim's birthday. But yes, by the time you listen to this, it'll be over. But Brian will still be celebrating his birthday. So by all means, wish him a happy birthday. So that, of course, is a happy birthday to my best friend and co-host, Jim Bruce.
Hey, everybody.
And a non-happy birthday to his best friend and co-host, Tom Griffin.
That really hurts for you to say on my birthday.
Wait, it's not your birthday. I said it's not your birthday. Yeah. Although I did say that on your birthday, so I don't know why you're just now bringing it up. When is your birthday, Tom?
It's in March.
All right. So remember that, folks. In March, the entire month of March, send Tom greetings. And our guest today is a good friend I've known for many years. You've seen him on G4, and he's a member of many, you know, porno and fetish-related sites that I'm sure you all are fans of. Mr. Chris Gore is here. Welcome, Chris, to the show.
Paul, thank you for that amazing introduction. How did you know that I'm a member of those sites? And by member, I'm not normally a paying member. Normally what I like to do is see if it's possible for me to get one of those 30-day free passes. I do also like to look at the Start the Tour. I'll click on that. But once it gets to where you have to pay the money, I generally...
But you are a member of, like, SuicideGirls.com?
I was a member of SuicideGirls.com. Okay. I have not renewed my subscription lately.
I thought maybe you had a deal going with them, like you gave them
I actually used to write for Suicide Girls, so I wrote articles for them. So at that time, I got a free membership.
There you go. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
But Chris was on our show long, long, long time ago. Do you even remember being on the show?
You know what's so funny? I actually don't remember being on the show. I was on the show?
Yeah, we came to E. We came to E once.
Oh my God, that's
and
right.
And recorded out front. Do you remember that?
No.
It was in the first 100 shows.
You don't remember it either?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was a million years ago. I think it might have been back when you were married, actually.
That was a long time ago.
That's how long I don't remember anything, though. So, just in general.
No.
What's so funny is, I do have, like, starting to get that horrible memory where it's I know I will remember people's faces, but I won't remember circumstances or names.
Yeah. For me, it's an age thing. Once I turn 10,
right?
They say memory is the second thing to go. You know that.
What's the first thing to go?
I don't remember.
Come on,
ladies. Hello.
Look at you.
How did I do that?
Nice.
Chris, the first time I met Chris was,
was it at a film festival?
No, I think
I saw your movie. The first time I saw you in a film. Oh. I was programming a film festival. I think it was the Sonoma Valley Film Festival. And I saw a film that you were in.
Was
Graham Elwood involved?
Was it Hello Junkie?
Because Jim was in that too. It might have been.
I'm trying to remember. It was one of the movies. Did you play a wrestler?
Oh, yes. Oh, me and Graham were in that wrestling movie.
Okay, it was you and Graham in a wrestling movie, and I saw that movie. I thought, this is really funny. This is a good. It was a short, right?
Well, they tried to make it a feature, but they cut it in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah, it was sort of like not. It was too long for a short, not long enough for a feature.
Yeah, it was called Sweets or I Want to Be a Wrestler.
But I remember
the Morrison Brothers.
We wrote about it on Film Threat, and then somehow I helped it get into a couple festivals, and that's how I think I first became aware of you, and then of course I cast you.
Yes. And well, then that's the first time we actually met was when we all went and saw Scooby-Doo together.
Right.
You brought your kids and I brought my daughter Zoe because Gracie was just a baby then. And Zoe was like two. But we all went and saw a preview of Scooby-Doo so we could review it.
Right.
Because I was going to talk to some guy who was writing for Film Threat at the time about Scooby-Doo. So that was kind of cool. And then I came over to your house. But that was back when you were a family man. That was back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day.
Those days are long over.
Yes, yeah.
You and I remember going to your house, and I was like, and this is back when I was married then too. But, like, I was like, boy, look at this. He's got this cool house and a tree house, and he's got a little office over here, and the kids seem really happy, and what a nice wife.
It was very Xanadu.
Normal. It was pretty normal, I got to say. I was surprised at how normal it was.
People are always shocked to find out that I have kids. They're always shocked because, A, I can pass for being younger than my actual age says on my driver's license. So that's number one. The other thing is, I come off so irresponsibly on the internet as like a walking disaster that the fact that I actually have sort of a responsible side to my life surprises people, but it's actually true. I mean, like you know, on the one hand, it's like I'm the kind of guy that like is a work hard, play hard. So when I play, mm-hmm. I have a good time. But yes. I'm also very serious. Like I'm serious about parenting. I'm serious about my responsibilities to my. See, I don't call her my ex-wife. I call her my previous because I feel like ex is a derogatory term. It's a negative term, and she's the mother of my children. So right. I always refer to her as my previous. She refers to me as her sugar daddy because I overcommit in my responsibilities, my financial responsibilities. I'm like, you do not have an HDTV? How dare you not have an HDTV?
So I gotta get in like, on this. Yeah.
I bought her an HDTV. So
well, that was nice of you.
Yeah, so it's, you know, so.
At some point, she's going to take you to court and you're going to get a judgment that just says, seriously, lay off.
Not so much. Exactly. I'm stalking her with gifts, but no, actually,
that's
it was
very nice.
It was a very, very amicable. Cool. I mean, look, I married a girl when I was young. We had kids. It did not work out, but we don't hate each other, and we didn't want to destroy each other in any divorce. And I feel that's like really common. In fact, when I first got divorced, I actually lived in that back house. You know, you talk about there were like two. There was like a studio, almost like a studio apartment that was above the garage, which was the Film Threat office in a way. And I lived there when we first separated. And I would tell people what was going on in my life, and I would say, "My life is like a sitcom where if I told you the plot, you would never believe that it was real. You'd say, no one would ever do that. That's stupid." Yet I did it. And then I found out that other people were in that situation because it's so financially devastating to get divorced.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've set up this lifestyle. Now you have to separate your finances. And then, and so a lot of people just say, we'll just still live together. We're just not married. And that only works out for so long. I mean, everything ended amicably, but
eventually when you're dating and you bring a girl home, you go, oh, pay no attention to the big house. Woman and those children.
Yes. Don't worry about that.
Those people.
And of course, whoever thought that this podcast would go down this road?
I did.
The comedy and the reality of.
Well, speaking of podcasts, one of the reasons you're here is not just to be a guest on our show, but because you have your own podcast that you started.
That's right.
Called Pod Crash.
Yes.
Tell the people the premise of that.
The premise of Pod Crash is that I'm too lazy to do a podcast. So what I do is I appear on other people's podcasts, and then I take the audio and I put it on my podcast with commentary, sort of bracketing. Like I just sort of cut it down to like the comedic highlights, mm-hmm. and then I'll discuss
it.
It's
gonna be a very short podcast.
So it's like I've been on everything from like podcasts about sex, obviously podcasts about movies, your podcast now about television. I was on a podcast about comic books. Upcoming mm-hmm. podcast. I'm going to be on a podcast about parenting called Geek Dad. I'm on a upcoming podcast called Storyworthy.
That's a good one.
So there's a lot of it's an opportunity for me to promote podcasts I really personally enjoy, and then secondarily be incredibly lazy about coming up with content for my podcast. It's very meta.
It's a great idea because it promotes other podcasts and it's a way for you to do your thing and get and that's also a great way to be a guest. Also, you tell people, "Yeah, I do this thing."
I like how your assessment of what he does was to just say what he had just said again.
What I like is how what I said was just another version of what he said. That's what I like.
I love that too.
I didn't like that as much, but if you do it again, I will love it.
I can't commit to a third one. Well, let's talk about TV now that you're here. Oh, well, where can people go to listen to that while we're talking?
Oh, yeah.
The kingoftv.com.
Yeah, no, and I will plug your podcast and website, everything, and you on my podcast. And I'll talk about it. I'll probably go into much more detail about
my
big fat independent movie and how I cast you in that and, you know, how we've known each other and then, you know,
Then, just so you know, I've heard his podcast, it gets really derisive. He's going to say a lot of nasty shit about you.
Well, I mean, he should. And if anyone knows about the nasty shit, it's Chris Gore.
Oh, I know all about it.
But where's the best place that people can listen to it?
Yeah, you can look up Podcrash with that Chris Gore. It's on iTunes and Stitcher Radio if you have the app. And then you can listen to it on my website at thatchrisgore.com. And you can follow the show at Podcrash Show on Twitter or me at That Chris Gore.
Now, Tom's.
I memorized that, by the way.
Well done.
Notice I wasn't holding a piece of paper. I got it in my brain.
Now, I remember when you, when I was emailing you, I thought this is odd because Tom just joined Twitter and his Twitter is That Tom Griffin.
Right. Okay, that's cool. It's fine. Like I actually started the whole. A lot of people think like, oh, you stole that Chris Gore from that Kevin Smith. It's the opposite. I when I was on MySpace, I could not get a personal MySpace.com/Chris Gore,
right?
Because that was taken. So I was like, yeah, fuck. I'll just be that Chris Gore. So I did that, and then I introduced Malcolm Ingram while he was promoting his movie Small Town Gay Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Malcolm Ingram, I said, look, you got to use social media. This is when MySpace was big, so this is how long ago it was. And then Kevin Smith ended up signing up for MySpace, and he used the moniker That Kevin Smith, which is totally fine. I mean, look, he may or may not have taken it from me, but who gives a shit? That's such a I wouldn't even care if he did. It's like an idea that's not even... I mean,
but the main thing is because... Like, well, in Tom's case, Tom Griffin is a fairly common name.
It's a top
name. There's other common names. And in your case...
You'd be surprised how many Chris Gores there are. There's a Chris Gore professional fisherman.
Really?
There's a Chris Gore who's on television in Australia, who's a stock trader. There is a Chris Gore that is a famous preacher that I always get mixed up with. If you look me up on Google, and he has a YouTube channel, and it's all like preaching the faith.
Really?
Christian values, yeah.
Because there's a Paul Goebel who's a Christian musician. Who has his own band spelled the same way.
I wonder if they're doing a podcast right now.
I want to do a podcast where I just have guests on that are named Chris Gore.
That would be cool.
So that Chris Gore, and actually, honestly, it predates even MySpace because I remember back in Detroit, every time people would refer to me, they'd say, oh, yeah, you know that guy, Chris Gore. And they would say, oh, that Chris Gore.
Oh, that Chris Gore.
And nice. In fact, there's a bar in Detroit that named a drink after me called Chris Gore Punch. Because I was so obnoxious in the creative community there that people would want to punch me. There's a longer story to that.
Okay,
but
I like
was
that.
Always referred to as that Chris Gore. And so that kind of just stuck and carried
but
over
then,
the internet.
On Twitter,
and I think it's fine. Other people should use it.
Of course.
I think it works. That Chris Gore, this Chris Gore. You can. There's a million variations.
But on Twitter, it got so big that someone eventually created... Bat Chris Gore, I saw.
That actually is me also.
Oh, okay.
That's
all Batman / Chris Gore related tweets.
Bat Chris Gore, which is also me, and I'm Zombie Chris Gore. It's my Batman my Batman and Zombie obsession. I have several other Twitter accounts. I have one that's @HanZarkov.
Okay.
All I tweet is when there's natural disasters, I say, I've been right all these years. It's an attack. From Mongo. So if you follow on Twitter, Edgar Wright follows the @HanZarkov account.
Oh, sweet.
So every time a natural disaster, no matter a tsunami, an earthquake, something California fires, HanZarkov blames it on Ming from Mongo. My other Twitter account is @SportsOrSex. All I do in this Twitter account is tweet, I quote sports announcers.
Okay.
So it's like, he got full penetration right up the middle.
Got it.
It's this sports language, especially when it comes to football, is so sexual. It's like they're announcing gay porn. So I didn't mean to go off on a long
excellent
thing there, but I'm
anytime.
Do you keep up on those Twitter accounts?
Yeah. It's usually something like with Bat Chris Gore is getting the most of my attention right now because of so much news because of the Dark Knight Rises.
Night, sure.
But it depends when something's going on. Yeah, I've got them all on my phone, and it's really just me flipping back and forth between the accounts. I'll occasionally tweet the wrong thing from one account, and I have to delete it. But
that's funny, because I tried to have the dedicated Twitter account for an idea. I am too lazy, and I am also too...
Yeah.
I have too short of an attention span. That's the biggest problem with me, is I lose focus quickly, because I had this idea... where is God now? I had this thing where I would just tweet places where God is because they say God is everywhere. And so no matter where I was, I'd say, at the grocery store, no, not here. And then the idea was, I would argue that God is nowhere.
Well, that's a good idea. You should do
that.
Yeah,
I know.
I also get Twitter accounts for any project I'm working on. Like if it's a TV show or a film project, I reserve the Twitter account. I'm obsessed with that. I'll observe the .com, the Twitter, the Facebook fan page, the everything.
You'll make the hat.
The Tumblr, like, just because I just want to have it. It's like reserved for when I do that project, and a couple of projects like that are coming up for me this year.
So I tried that with Shit My Dog Takes. I was too lazy.
You stayed with it for a little while.
I did, but yeah. It wasn't just Twittering. I had to find a picture of dog shit. I had to download it to my computer. Then I had to upload it with TwitPic. And then I had to listen to a bunch of people going, why are you putting pictures of dog shit on the internet? What's wrong with you?
I just do everything with the iPhone switching back and forth from accounts. And I'm also ADD.
I got a more fancier phone.
You got to get a smartphone. You need one.
Yeah.
Jim
smartphones
has a smartphone.
Think they're all great.
Jim has a smartphone.
Yeah, which is ironic.
Right.
Yeah, I don't Jim understand. Has one.
All right, let's talk about TV. This week, of course, was a historic week for this year, or rather last week was a historic week for television because the worst TV show of the year premiered last week.
I did my job.
Excellent.
I watched this thing.
And that was Work It.
First of all, I don't know. The worst TV show of the year? Let's think about this. There has been recently a renaissance in television. I mean, let's face it. There's been a renaissance with, miniseries that have exploded.
Yeah.
Ongoing series, the release of television shows on DVD, mm-hmm. and now TV shows hitting the internet. I think we can mark the date that renaissance ended with the premiere of Work It on ABC.
Yeah,
that is when the renaissance of television ended. Was that
it's like
day.
When you play
Dark Ages begin.
Yeah, when
this is the Dark Ages of TV is now.
You know how when you're playing Civilization and it says to you at some point, you've reached a golden era in your civilization, and you start making more money and your armies do better, and then for no reason it says, Our era's golden era has ended, and you need to reconfigure things.
There's unrest in Constantinople.
That's exactly right. When Work It premiered, that everything went back to the way it was.
I agree, and I really think that it's going because you look at shows like Community that mm-hmm. are brilliant, that is in a state of flux right now, which makes no freaking sense.
Right,
and
right.
Also shows like Arrested Development, which one day they have to make that movie. I found out what the premise for the Arrested Development movie is. I can't wait to see it.
You know what's funny is...
Do you know what it is?
No.
You don't want me to tell you.
No, I don't, actually.
It's
I
so
was going to block you
good.
Since you brought it up. No,
it's
I don't
It's so good. But all I'm saying is that I feel like now what's happening with television is because their stakes are so high with mainstream television. I think, we're saying we're jokingly that Work It maybe signaled the end of the Renaissance. I actually think that it could be because the internet is where good TV, I believe, is going to migrate. You've got YouTube is funding channels. You've got...
Right.
Hulu is doing original content, and Netflix mm-hmm. has that show. Oh my gosh, it escapes me. It's the mafia guy that gets
Lilyhammer.
Lilyhammer, yeah. And if you saw the trailer for Lilyhammer, it's amazing. Did you see it?
That's Stevie Ray.
It looks really good.
Yeah.
Lilyhammer looks amazing.
Right?
I really and also you look at things like to me HBO when people are willing to pay for good television.
Yeah.
Boardwalk Empire.
Well,
shows like good Boardwalk Empire and Dexter.
HBO.
What's that?
In that case, it's HBO.
It's not TV. It's HBO.
It's look exactly. Okay, it's not TV. It's HBO. Okay, yes. But what I mean is that people are willing to pay for good television, but free television, this really may be the end. I mean, shows like 30 Rock are still hanging on. But
you have a dog named Free Television.
Your dog is named Free Television?
No, he's just being an idiot.
I love...
You know, I started showing my daughter Arrested Development because for the past couple weeks there wasn't a lot on TV. And she was like, what is there to watch? And she started watching early episodes of How I Met Your Mother on the Roku on Netflix. And I said, check this out. And I showed her the first episode of Arrested Development. And I said, this show is legendary. And she watched it and she was like, that is funny. And she's now like up to season 3 already, just on her own. Watching Arrested Development. And I said to her just yesterday, I go, now that you've watched the show for a long time, do you agree it's one of the funniest things ever on TV? And she said, oh, definitely. And she's 13. And amazingly, because she doesn't like to watch things that are dated. She refuses to watch anything. Like, I had to force her to watch The Twilight Zone. And she refuses to watch anything in black and white or Bewitched or anything that's clearly dated. But Arrested Development, it's not you can't tell. It could be on today. Aside from the fact that those kids are really young. You know, Aaliyah Shawkat, and they look really young.
Yeah, kids today aren't young.
Not anymore. But she watches it. Older than ever. And she's like, he looks like she says about Will, what the fuck's his name?
Arnett.
Will Arnett, yes. She says, he looks like he had...
Whoa, wait a minute. Jim?
Yeah.
Just right? came up with someone's name?
Yeah. Happens.
Nice job.
Don't do it on purpose. Oh, my God.
But she says, Will...
This is going to be the year the world ends.
She says, he looks like he had more hair, or less hair than he does now on Up All Night. And I go, well, that's probably the case. Like, just like fucking... Joel, just like Joel McHale, has more hair now than he did when he first started doing All the right. soup.
We are going to get back to work it because I want to talk about
okay,
it.
Yeah, yes. Let's. It's clear. Talk about how bad it is really just like beside the point. Just saying it's bad is, I mean, it's like saying,
but I don't, you know, there's a sun. I want to go into some specifics because
go ahead.
Here's the thing. I don't, this show is ostensibly about television, and as a result, I don't watch any of the shows we talk about. I don't do that in general because I, for a lot of reasons, mostly because I'm lazy and stuff. So I made a point of watching this show because Paul wants to talk about it, and also I've heard how bad it was. Oh my fucking crap on a fucking cracker that somebody made me eat. There's a, in the very first scene, this is how shitty this show is. In the very first scene, guy comes home. He's lamenting the fact that he's been unemployed for over a year. Gosh, the economy is so rough. And I will say that the show's very relatable.
Oh, sure.
Fucking assholes. So then he goes, he has a job. He went for a job interview and he goes, well, it wasn't a total waste. I got these. And he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out sugar packets. And she says, oh, sugar packets. Oh, okay, he stole sugar packets. Which isn't a very funny joke, really.
No.
But also... salt and pepper, and then okay, the unfunny joke. Now you've tagged the unfunny joke,
right?
And then wait for it. What? We're not done with the shitty joke, and he reaches in to grab something else, which is just something else you took, right? And he can't. It's as if the costume guy gave him too small a pocket in his jacket because it takes forever for him to put that fucking meat hook that's later on going to be a lady hand. And he fucking puts his little fucking meat hook and it takes forever. And it's, what is it? Is it a surprise? Is it something different? No, it's just ketchup packets.
Get it?
Also, what office has ketchup packets? Why does that make sense?
And soy sauce.
Why does that make sense? Well, you know, I went to a job interview at the condiment processing plant. That doesn't make any sense. And it's the thing is, you can't tag a non-joke. You know what I mean? Like, I can't call Paul and say, hey, Paul, how you been? And he goes, oh, pretty good. I go, oh, how do we tag that? There's got to be a joke. You have to have a joke first. Jokes get tags. Nothings don't get tags. You don't tag nothings.
If you were getting a job at the condiment processing plant, though, you'd only be able to take home the irregulars, right? Like the packets that said ketchup on them, or the salt that had actual pepper in it, all the salt pockets that accidentally had pepper
or
in them.
Or ridiculously oversized, where you're like, well, this is too much. Yeah.
There's way too much cream in this creamer.
But then the other thing is like, and I'll let you guys talk too, but the other thing that just immediately came to mind when I saw this hulking mass of an actor that they had playing the lead, where I'm like, all right, so here's the thing. Is part of the joke that people... am I supposed to laugh that in this world people don't automatically know this is a dude, this ridiculous chin,
right.
This wonderful chin for a man, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great chin.
He's huge.
He's just a hulk. It's if it was a skit, like if it was Carol, like played by Horatio Sands.
Carol.
And where part of the joke is that we're supposed to laugh, and of course nobody would think this was a woman and the characters within this world, but that's not part of the joke. And the reason I know it's not part of the joke is because they don't have any jokes. It's a joke-free zone.
Well, I mean, a couple big problems that I had, and I immediately identify with everything you said. I mean, the humor is lame. The thing that struck me, actually, that was irritating was, A, they're making light of the whole economic crisis in the U.S. I think that's... I mean, not that that should not be an area of humor, but I think the way that they've done it is so condescending and so irritating. The thing that bugged me was, why the fuck are they still in a house that has that has an island in the kitchen?
Mm-hmm.
Just as someone who has in the past purchased a home, and you look at homes, a house that has an island in the kitchen, that's a pretty, that's getting
true.
Up there in cost.
How were they able to afford that in the first
place? If he's been out of work for a year, why are they still in that house? And look, the sort of gender switching where he's, you know, playing a woman, that's a classic in comedy. Bugs Bunny's done it.
Right. But Bugs Bunny looked more like a woman than these guys
right.
do.
Oh, this guy did
that's
not,
the sad part.
The humor was offensive, and it wasn't funny.
It was racist.
And
it was misogynist.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so it just sort of hit all the marks of, it wasn't just bad. Bad would be fine. I could handle bad. It was just across the board, like it's sort of the death knell rung. And I thought it was the show Whitney, which I happen to like Whitney Cummings, the comedian. Mm-hmm. The style of show she's doing, that Whitney show on NBC, which I'll always catch the tail part of Whitney.
Yeah,
you know, it's just
too.
Like after The Office, which I love The Office. That's the style of comedy that I like today. I think that that is modern comedy. Is that an ode to the old style comedy with the fake laughter and BS and jokes that aren't funny and people out of central casting where everybody's good looking and everybody looks exactly the same and there's no diversity in the people. I'm not talking about racial diversity, even just diversity in the human style. Interesting looking people.
Yeah, you
it doesn't
talk
exist.
About...
Whitney is awful, and like this thing, Work It, is an offense
right.
to the TV gods.
What I say is...
But I want to know what you think, Paul.
Well, like...
Did you like King of TV? King of
Thank
TV!
You. The show before it, the new and improved Home Improvement, the Tim Allen show, that's a bad show. That's right. What I would call bad.
Right.
So Work It would have to improve by yards to be as good as that bad show. And I think that's funny because it's like you watch the Tim Allen show and you're like, oh, this is pretty horrible. But then you watch Work It and go, all right, Tim Allen thing's not so bad. I'm going to check that out again. And of course, the sad part is they canceled Man Up. And put Work It in its place.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Man Up, actually, you know, I thought it was really funny.
I liked Man Up.
And
a lot.
The kids liked it, and I could watch it with the kids, and it was and there was funny jokes in it. This fucking thing, I mean, at one point the Amory Nolasco says, well, you know, I'm Puerto Rican, so I'm good at selling drugs. Whoa! That's not cool. That's not a cool thing to say.
Yeah.
Why? Because all Puerto Ricans sell drugs and you can say that because you're Puerto Rican?
Oh,
that's not okay.
Oh, white writers. You're so
right?
funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is a landscape of a type of person. You can see the demographic that is making the show. And I remember I did a panel a while back at the Writers Guild about this very issue that they actually will make shows specifically for a target, even including like this sort of, you know, borderline racial humor, because they're trying to trying to sell certain types of products. So the TV networks are making a show to sell certain types of things. And the reason this came out at this Writers Guild panel, the reason that there weren't a lot of shows on mainstream network television for other racial, other types of races is that we're sort of targeting them is because the theory was that they weren't spending as much money as the white demographic.
Right.
It was.
Well, yeah, they don't want, it's like they want young people, especially young girls.
By the way, isn't
with disposable
true. That's
income.
Your racist assumption.
Well,
anyway.
that's exactly the point.
Crazy.
It's like, why would you make, well, this show is for blacks and this show is for Latinos. And it's, I think if anything, to me, J.J. Abrams with Lost did the best job of having a very diverse group.
From
a very international group, and that's why that show was an international hit as well. It wasn't just Lost was not
I
just a hit
it.
In the United States.
So you talked about the underlying racist, not underlying the racist thing that was said on the show.
Right.
Here's an underlying part to the premise that's absurd, which is the reason they get this job is because women have it so good in the workplace.
Right,
things are so good if you're a woman right now in the workplace. You can get a job and a high paying job. Notwithstanding the fact that statistics still say that women are underpaid compared to men, and that statistic still remains. Not in this world, and that's so strange. Well, it is strange to me how stupid people can be. It's sometimes very surprising that I'm like, you wrote this show. You must have been thinking about your premise, but your premise is fundamentally flawed. That's not a current problem in the workplace.
Also, who is that guy that's on Work It? I mean,
well,
I don't know. Like, is he a comedian that I should know?
The only time... Did you recognize him, Tom?
I didn't watch it.
Tom this time didn't
watch it. Well, then you should be quiet. Do your homework. Paul sent me this email. I had to read stuff, which I'm reading furiously before I came over here. I watched that crappy show you made me watch.
Usually, Tom always watches everything, and Jim's the one who doesn't watch it.
I'll actually tell you why I didn't watch it.
Well, that guy is... he played Don on How I Met Your Mother. And I didn't even recognize him. And it's funny because, again, the kids watch How I Met Your Mother and love it. And I love it. We're watching it. And I go, do you guys realize that's Don from How I Met Your Mother? And they're like, no, it isn't. And we're looking at him. I go, I swear to God, it is. But it doesn't. I didn't recognize him at all until I read, you know, I read about it. He couldn't be less funny. And just the idea that I understand he's a salesman. And they try to hammer that in. He used to sell cars. And that's why he'd be good at selling drugs. I get it. But, you know, they recruit, you know what, where in real life, where they get women to do this job, these sales, these drug rep jobs, they recruit them, they're cheerleaders out of high school. they're cheerleaders in high school who clearly have no future doing anything else after high school. And they say, well, you're young, you're cute, you're very personal, you have a great smile, come sell our drugs for us. And then they teach them how to
do
that.
We should clarify prescription drugs.
Yes, sell our pharmaceuticals for us.
right.
And they do it. But they do also have men as well. It's mostly women, but they do have guys who do this job as well. And that's the part that I thought was horseshit.
Also, if they hire women, if we presume that it's for sexist reasons or whatever. Which
it is. They go to see these older doctors and they charm them and
right.
They flash their boobs.
And that's completely fine. So then you don't hire the giant linebacker guy.
Right, the ugly ones. You don't hire the god-awful, ugly, giant women with big man hands.
Yeah, you don't. Right.
But these are the type of girls that you're talking about to sell those things are also the types of girls that when you go to bars, they're like, hey, do you want to give me your driver's license? Swipe this. I'll give you this sort of flashlight keychain that says Winston cigarettes
on it.
So and take this
girls.
Little poll and let me get your information. And it's always those girls like they're the, you know, the cigarette girls, or they're trying to push a certain alcohol where you get a free shot
or
like a Red Bull thing. And they're all these, they call them the street teams.
Yep.
These are these street teams that go out and sell things. So that exists. And they hire generally really attractive women that, you know, look, I've succumbed to those girls. I got a free pair of Jameson earbuds recently when they swiped my...
And those girls, by the way, are just a shade below the girls who want to know if you want to fucking party. Because at least them, they're being honest, and they get $200.
And the answer to that is always, yes, we do.
We do want to party. Then the other thing, the fact that they're so big... Speaking of Lost, you know, Rebecca Mader is on the show. And that made me so sad. That because she was so good on Lost and all the other things she's done, she's a talented and beautiful
actress.
Who was
she on Lost?
She was for our
audience and me.
She was she was the one that Jeremy Davies was in love with, who came from the freighter.
Oh right, yeah.
Who eventually died, got a nosebleed and died.
Spoiler!
In the last season, I can't remember what her character's name was, but she was really good on Lost, and now she's the bitch on Work It. She's the one bitch in the office, which again is a fucking sexist thing that there always has to be. Whenever you have a group of women around, one of them has to be psycho and one of them has to be a total bitch, right? I live with three women. They're just all idiots is all. what were you going to say about it, Tom?
You know that I'm pretty forgiving about shows and very patient. Like I'm still watching Whitney. We revealed a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
I want to hear your defense of Whitney.
I don't have a great defense.
Okay. Let's discuss Whitney, please.
All right.
Whitney, please.
I sample a lot of shows, and I'm very patient, especially with comedies. This particular show, every ad I saw for it was just so ham-fisted, so not at all clever, so just like the worst possible version you could imagine someone doing of this premise that I couldn't. I said no. I don't think I can do this. I can't. I do not want to watch this show. And I did. And I just let it slip off my radar. So even when
you got the email that I said please watch so we can talk about it, you said no.
In one ear and out the other.
You said I will not do that, sir. Nice.
I just the commercials looked so terrible. I just couldn't do it.
Is it just they're looking to fill a slot and just like, ugh, this is all we've got?
Well, they announced this back in the fall. So,
but even I heard at the upfronts, this was ridiculed as,
of course it was.
Like, before it even premiered, people were saying, why are you even making this? I mean, there's so many pilots. I mean, you've seen there's a lot of dead TV pilots that have made it to air. There was the one Conan O'Brien produced one with Adam West where he was.
Yeah. Look Well.
Yeah. Where he played a cop. Well, no, he was an actor who played a cop on TV and had an honorary badge that was in Lucite.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many good ideas. There's Heat Vision and Jack.
I watched the IT Crowd, the American IT Crowd the other day. And
I have not seen that. How is it?
Which it's word for word the first episode of the English one.
Oh, really?
But it's good, mainly because Richard Ayoade is in the American version.
Are you really?
He plays the exact same role.
Oh, that's great.
It's like they said, let's take the best part of the English version and put it in the American version. And of course, Joel McHale is the other guy. And so I watch it and I think, and you know, that was on the schedule. Not only did they make that, but they ordered like 6 episodes and put it on the schedule and then never got around to doing it and yanked it. But I watched this I finally found a copy and I torrented it and I watched it and it's like, word for word, there's a few things that are different. Like, you know, in the first season of the English IT Crowd, the boss is really stupid. And in the first episode, there's this funny bit where they go up to his office and...
what, the main boss, the male boss, not their female supervisor.
Right, right. Boss of Renham Industries.
Right.
They go up to basically narc on her to say she doesn't know anything about computers. And he's on the phone yelling at people about being a team. And he says, if you can't be a team, you're all fired. And they realize, oh, shit, we're all going to get fired if we do this. And then they say, no, everything's great. And then it sets up the premise for the show, why they all work together. But he does a real funny thing. He goes, let me show you this picture. And he flips over a picture of the A-team. And he goes, look at that. Glasses, good looks. Jewelry man, they're a team. And it's fucking hysterical. And then he says, as they're leaving, he goes, by the way, why did you come up here? And Roy goes, oh, just to tell you that your computer is all set up for voice recognition. He goes, great. And they leave and he goes, hello. 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 And he keeps doing that until like the end of the episode is all over in the credits. And they show him again. It's dark. All the lights are off. Hello! Hello! He's screaming at his computer. It's fucking hysterical. And that wasn't in the American version, unfortunately, because Rocky Carroll plays the boss. And I think they wanted it to be where, like, the boss isn't as stupid in this one. They didn't want it to be completely ridiculous. But aside from that, it's exactly the same. And I watched that and thought, this could have easily been on American TV. I don't know why it wasn't, but it's 100 times funnier than fucking Work It.
TV.
It's not, because that's, you gotta understand how math works.
Oh, because 100 times 0 is still 0?
Yeah, man.
But the thing is that, I mean, we're TV fanatics all sitting in this room, but, you know, we will seek out stuff on the BBC. I don't need the American version. I like the British version. I mean, I grew up watching...
Free Agents, perfect example.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up watching, you know, BBC shows like Monty Python and Doctor Who and other British shows. And this doesn't, you know, and BBC America is awesome.
Yeah, now it's readily available to people. It's not like you had to wait for it to be on PBS like we did when we were kids, or you had to wait to get it, you know, on VHS or something, you know.
Well, I feel like the BBC has a better idea, which is, you know, we'll put a show out there. We're not going to do too many episodes. We'll do 6.
Right.
And I feel that the problem with American television is the numbers. They need 13 or 22.
Well, because you're not selling soap every day over there.
I mean, that was to me the greatest, the flaw of Lost were... Is there too many episodes? I mean, you could have deleted season 2 from you know, the canon, and it would have made no difference whatsoever,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of some notable deaths. But I think that's where I feel like the BBC gets it right.
Because even is it
that we only see the good stuff that actually makes it to the US? I mean, I have a favorite BBC show that
you'll have to BitTorrent, although
I do have a Region 2 DVD of it, which is Nathan Barley. Have you ever seen Nathan Barley?
I've never even heard of it.
Write that one down.
Okay.
If you talk Nathan Barley, I'll come back on the show, because I would love to discuss it with you. Might even have episodes on my phone. Nathan Barley is brilliant. It's basically about how internet and web culture is making people stupider.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about this guy who writes an article called Rise of the Idiots for a magazine called Sugar Ape, which is a which is a culture magazine that they have a meeting with the magazine staff, and he holds up, "What do you think the new logo?" And the logo says rape, and then really tiny letters it says sugar, you know,
right?
Sugar okay. Ape. It just says rape really big. What does everyone think of the new logo? So he writes this letter. He's surrounded by morons. They're playing a version of a game that's like rock, paper, scissors, but they play cock, muff, bunghole. And it's very similar to rock, paper, scissors. And you can, trust me, look up cock, muff, bunghole.
Nice.
And Nathan Barley's this moron who has collected like all these like stupid internet videos. And he runs this website called trashbat.cock. Because it was registered in the Cook Islands outside of New Zealand. You have to actually, the only way to get a .co.ck internet address is to go to the Cook Islands outside of New Zealand and actually register it physically there at their offices. You can't do it over the internet. So he owns trashbat.cock and runs these videos and somehow becomes friends with this guy who wrote this article, but he's attracted like all the morons that he despises with a passion okay. End up worshiping him because he thinks, oh yeah, they're talking about those other idiots, not us. We're not the idiots. You know, those other stupid people. So yep. Every time he's talking about morons, so he's being revered by the very people he's repulsed by. And so it's an awesome show. It only lasted 6 episodes, and it was not a hit in the United States to the point where it did not appear on BBC America ever. I had to find it on the internet. I bought a DVD. A legally obtained DVD, and I even passed it on to the president at G4 TV where I work, and I said, we need to get this show. Fuck this cops, cheaters, bullshit we run on G4, which has no connection whatsoever to Attack of the Show and X-Play or Web Soup.
Right.
You know, it's like, those shows fit the demographic audience. These other shows that they put on, I have no idea who the fuck they're trying to reach.
I think they're just trying to make
although, money. You know, we have a new president at G4, right?
No.
A guy named Adam Stotsky. Is the new guy, and he's from Sci-Fi Channel, and he's now taken over G4. I have no idea what the politics are of this.
Give me a meeting with that guy.
I'm sure Cops got great ratings. First of all, I got to get myself a meeting with that. But I mean, look, I'm sure Cops got great ratings.
Yeah.
And they're great lead-ins, but it's the kind of show people just flip through and they go, oh, I guess I'll watch this. But it's
yep.
But I feel that it was so different than the kind of thing that. Was on my
out.
Own network. I'd like to hear you review G4 TV, and that would be really interesting for me. That'd be very meta.
Yeah, maybe
so maybe if we have time, you'll give an assessment.
Maybe when I come on your show.
Yeah, yeah. When you come, well, you are on my.
Oh,
show.
Oh, wait a minute!
You are on your my show. You are. You're on Podcrash right
about
now.
Meta.
But definitely find Nathan Barley.
Yes, I'm going to do
it's
that.
It's freaking
sure.
Brilliant, and I thought that like, hey, they would be so excited by it that they'd want to do. Maybe they want to do a U.S. version, or they would in a smart way. They would purchase it. Well, IFC ended up buying Nathan Barley and airing it. So it did end up actually making it to American television. It wasn't very well promoted. And it is, I mean, this is a show where there are jokes about having sex with 14-year-old girls. There's jokes, there's rape jokes, but all in the way that, like, Work It isn't smart enough to be able to make that make sense. In this, it's all like, it's typical comedic situations. I'd really love to hear your assessment of Nathan Barley.
I'm going to watch it. I'm going to definitely watch it. All right, well, so that's obviously Work It is horrible. I think that's the final word on that.
To some.
Keep it foolish.
And to some who actually watched it. Well, let's move on. I want to remind people, I was on the David Feldman podcast last week, and I did a thing with Frank Conniff, and Mark Thompson from Fox News.
The Frank Conniff?
Yes, friendly Frank Conniff. And we did a roundtable and we talked about Rick Santorum or whatever and a lot of shit. And it was really fun and it was really funny. And so you should listen to David Feldman podcast and listen to me on it. Let's catch up with trivia. Going all the way back to episode 276 with Caleb, when Caleb Bacon was here, I asked who created the show Ask Harriet, which was about a dude who dressed up like a woman to get a job. And it was somebody who was on this show before. It was actually Peter Marietta. Our good friend from college, Pete Marietta, created Ask Harriet, who now is his new show is called Game Over or something, I think. It's premiering on the Cartoon Network. Nick Mendoza got that, right? So way to go, Nick Mendoza! Right from The Simpsons? Mendoza! And then in our New Year's episode, the Christmas episode, about what was the best of the year with the Battleship Retention guys, the question was... when Claire Danes was on SNL And who did she say wrote her recommendation letter to get into college? It was Oliver Stone. Because at the time she appeared in U-Turn, I think. So that was the correct answer to that. Matthew J. got that right. And, oh, wait, I'm totally fucked up. Nick Mendoza did not get that, the Pete Marietta question right. Nobody did, as a matter of fact. That's the answer. No one wrote in. Nick Mendoza got the second question right. So Matthew J. got the Oliver Stone question right. And he wanted me to say that his improv group, Judo Range, is doing a show at the Philly Improv Theater March 1st and 2nd. So there you go, Matthew J. So Nick Mendoza got the other question right, which was about Terriers. Did you watch Terriers when it was on, Chris?
No.
It was one of my favorite shows, and I said that was the worst part of the year was that that got canceled. And I asked, what was the name of the theme song for Terriers? It was called Gunfight Epiphany, and Nick Mendoza got that run correct and got himself...
Oh, Mendoza!
Mendoza got himself a DVD.
You know? You know what I mean?
So here's the question for this week.
Who wrote that song? Who did that perform that song?
Mendoza.
Mendoza performed the theme song?
It's the name of the group, Mendoza, yeah.
Oh, all right.
Everything's Mendoza. So the question this week is about Bosom Buddies.
I didn't even get what I was doing. It was from The Simpsons.
On Bosom Buddies, of course, where they dress like women, not to get a job, but so they could have a place to live, they worked at an ad agency. What is the name of the ad agency that Kip and Henry worked at? Who has an idea? Anybody know? Chris?
I have no idea.
You just want to buzz in?
I just want to buzz in. This is fun. We're playing a game.
Okay. Anyone else got a guess? I know Jim doesn't know.
Hanks and Sklolari.
That's dumb. That would be a dumb thing.
But they did it.
It would have been meta.
Well, it would have been too meta. I will say this. There's an episode where they have their high school reunion, and they keep doing flashbacks to when the two of them were in high school, and Henry was like a nerd who loved to be the hall monitor, and Kip was a stoner who rarely went to class. And then they're in the hallway talking, and behind them is a roster of the basketball team, and the two bottom names are P. Scolari, T. Hanks. So that's in an episode you can watch. But
an Easter egg for the fans.
An Easter egg, exactly. So if you know where they worked, the name of the ad agency where they worked, go ahead and write to me, Paul, at thekingoftv.com, and I'll happily send you a prize. It could be I just got John Mulaney's stand-up special on DVD. I will happily send you after I watch it. Or any one of the many old TV screeners I got here. Let's see. I'll pick one out that you could take home. Downton Abbey. Look at this.
You're just saying you've never seen that.
I was just talking about how I never saw it. This one's still in plastic.
That's why you've never seen it.
Because it's in plastic.
Yeah. So how can you even watch it? It's right? In plastic.
I don't even know how many episodes is on this screener, but you can watch that. And, of course, if you want to get a screener, you can always order our hilarious video content videos, and I will send you, you can order them one for 99 cents, five for $4, or 10 for $7. How much is that a piece, Chris?
I have no clue.
And if you order all 10... you will also get a screener, a mystery screener that I will send you. I will reach in the box just like I'm doing now and pull out, for your consideration, Jimmy Kimmel Live. It has episodes with Tom Hanks who is this, Mike Tyson in the President's Speech. All kinds of good screeners here. What else do I got? This big one is, for Discovery, you got Deadliest Catch, Mythbusters, Storm Chasers, American Chopper. Look at all these discs.
Man, I fucking hate those shows.
So you can get all those if you order them.
Just do. Those are all History Channel, right?
Yes, I just said History
Discovery.
Channel.
Oh, is that Discovery?
Oh, Discovery. Yes, I just said Discovery. And then I said History. All right.
I hate them both.
Let's talk about this thing that happened over the weekend. For those of you who don't know, comedian Barbara Gray wrote a blog about how she went to see Patton Oswalt. And he went off on this woman in the audience.
Well, no, she didn't go see him. It was her show. She was performing at the show.
Well, that's what I mean.
He did a drop.
She saw him. To say it was her show is...
Well, Barbara Gray's a comedian.
Yes.
She was performing as
part of... She was performing on the show, yeah.
Part of a comedy show, and Patton Oswalt did a drop-in.
Right.
Where, if you're a big, famous, and established comedian, you can pretty much drop in anywhere to try out new material at smaller shows... where at least you have the safety of hopefully being able to just see if see if this new material works.
Right.
And you can kind of work it out.
And a lot of people knew, but it wasn't like a surprise. Like, I remember back when I used to work at the Improv, every once in a while, like, Chris Rock would show up. And, of course, it was completely unannounced. And it was just like, oh, you guys are lucky you're here tonight. Here's Chris Rock with his notebook, going to try out some jokes. But everybody knew he was Patton was going to be on the show, so it was a packed house.
And I've seen some drop-ins before. I saw Aziz Ansari once. Mm-hmm. And he was funny, but what he was doing was he was doing material off of his iPhone. So he would just go, he'd sort of check through his like email, he was going through folders, or like his notepad, and he'd say, and he'd do a joke, okay. And then he'd just
does that at the Magic Castle.
Yeah. Patton, though, I know when he's trying out new material, he's really trying to perform it. Like he's trying to actually get, and I know he's the type of person that he approaches his material like a writer, like, I'm going to lose that sentence there. Right. This is a better segue.
And also, he was shorter. He's preparing it for a special.
Right.
Because unlike, you know, he's not preparing it to go on the road or anything. He's putting a new special together. And for those of you who don't know, once you do a special, that you can't do that material ever again. Because, like, you do that material on the road, people go, we saw it. And so it's a big deal. You kind of can only do that once. So he was trying to work on a new bit.
Is it for a special, or is it for a new CD, or?
He said it was for a special.
I thought it was for a special.
Okay. Yeah.
So what happened is a woman pulled out her phone and she was taping him. He asked her to stop. I'm just going to give the short version because you can see this on the web. She asked her to stop. He asked her to stop. She said okay, but she was kind of a dick about it. He went off on her. He wasn't like violent about it, but he went off. She eventually left. He kept talking shit about her. And Barbara Gray felt it necessary to write this blog about it, how basically it was sad and gross seeing one of her heroes go off on this woman and like make fun of her for being ugly and whatever.
She also said that it created kind of a vibe in the room.
But that always happens. I mean, the thing is, that's always going
to
happen.
But I think you just have to acknowledge the elephant in the room. I mean, I did.
You have to.
I did a stand-up gig recently where, I mean, it was a good, like, the comedians were good. It was a fun show and a lot of, you know, good energy with the audience. But it was off Melrose where you could hear the traffic in the room. Mm. And my first thing when I got up, and I'm surprised that no one did it before me. But I finally went, once I got up on stage, I said, hey, so great to be this. We're the acoustics you can hear when the bus is going by. I'm going to have to tie my jokes.
That happened. I mean, there's
a bus schedule. I mean, it's like you just have to sort of acknowledge the elephant in the room.
You have to.
It kind of changes their vibe. But it's, you know, this is weird. Is it as bad as, so is it as bad as, say, because immediately when I heard the circumstances, before I'd even read the blog, I was immediately already on Patton's side. Because the idea of, you know, having a comedian's material is precious, you know.
Yeah.
Especially when you're working it out. It's like, it would be like your favorite band performing demo versions of their songs in front of an audience to kind of see if they play. So,
and then you record, and then somebody records
it. And somebody records it and then puts the demo version out.
No, so, you're absolutely right.
So it's even worse than that. It's even worse than that because even if that were to happen, people would still be interested in the final product of the demo songs. Whereas with the joke, the demo version of the joke ruins the finished version of the joke more or less if you've seen the demo, right?
Yeah, and what happens is, I mean, that this kind of shit happens all the time. And what's funny to me is, it gained a lot of traction over the weekend. Patton posted a response to it, and I guess he had a back and forth with Barbara. And a lot of people weighed in and said, you know, fuck that woman, or wow, Patton. Like April Richardson, who's going to be on the show next week or the week after.
Oh, I love April. Can you say hi to her for me?
Okay.
We did a show together at M-Bar.
Yeah, she's great.
I love April.
But she even said, you know, for him to talk about the woman's looks is really fucked up and out of line. And the bottom line, what it all came down to was everyone said, yes, that woman was wrong, but Patton could have handled it better. That's pretty much what everybody says in one way or another. And what's funny to me is not that happened or you know, because I've been at plenty of shows where some shit went down. And like I remember when we were starting out at open micers in Tucson, there were some hecklers in the audience who wouldn't shut up. And we were all just open micers who, for the most part, deserved being heckled.
So you've done stand-up before.
Yeah, once or twice.
Yes.
And for the most part, we deserved being heckled. But I remember then a guy who was working there that week got up, and rather than do material, he basically lectured these hecklers on how they weren't being cool. He got up and said, you know what? These guys who are up here tonight, they're doing this for free, and they're very inexperienced, and it takes a lot of courage to be up here. And the last thing they need is for you to make it tough for them. You know, I can take it,
because this is what I do for a living. But these guys, they don't need that.
This was at an open mic?
Yeah, and it was in Tucson, and right. and he was working there for the week, so he was just going up for the fuck of it. But I thought that was really cool of him. And he said, and more importantly, all the people who came here didn't come here to see you. They came here to see us. So you should really be quiet. And everyone clapped, and it was awesome. And he said, okay, that's my time, thanks. And he left. And it was great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it was great because, A, he knew he didn't need to impress anybody. And he took time out to basically defend us. And he did something that we weren't equipped to do at the time. And I never forgot that. I read
Barbara Gray's blog. I think it's on Tumblr. I read
right.
Patton Oswalt's response and some of the comments on PattonOswalt.com.
Yeah.
And I also read someone wrote, it was on some blog where it was just an audience member that sat near the girl who did it.
Who saw the whole thing.
So the whole thing went down and she was in the wrong. And Patton kind of took it too far. But having read all of that, I would defend Patton. He did not call her a cunt. Because I feel like
right.
if you used the C word, that would be taking it too far. That would be like Michael Richards territory. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
That would have been going off. Like, and also, I feel like in a way, because I've been indirectly experienced something like this. In the sense that intellectual property is something, you know, it's, mm-hmm. first of all, it's tough enough to make it in the entertainment business.
Right.
But intellectual property and ideas are things that you protect. And he was protecting those ideas. And in a way, I feel like he was speaking for all comedians. Please don't do this. And I know, having followed Patton on Twitter, that this has happened before where other people have, videotaped him and put early bits for right. show for things on YouTube. And I know he had one exchange where he asked a guy to take it down and he took it down. And then it's so tough.
Well, and then,
you know, doing stand-up. And yeah. Look, I've only recently started doing stand-up in the last year. This is at the urging of, it seems like everywhere, if I was at Home Depot, I'd be goofing around with people. And they said, are you a comedian? Do you do stand-up? But this is years of people telling me. And finally, I just decided, well, I guess I do TV and people think I'm funny on TV, I'll just start doing sort of this different version. So I'm speaking with very little authority. But when I was with Film Threat magazine, we had cases where people were bootlegging our videos and DVDs that we sold.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the kind of people who, you know, we'd be writing these checks to the filmmakers. So when people were bootlegging things that were legally obtainable from us, it was taking money directly out of mm-hmm. the pockets of filmmakers who we were trying to support and champion with Film Threat magazine. Because we, at one time, and you remember, we had a video, both VHS. We go back to like distributing yeah. movies on VHS and DVD. So there was one case that blew up where a guy was bootlegging a particular movie by a filmmaker named Jörg Butgerat, who did a film called Necromantic. And we sold, I remember writing him huge checks and sending him money and feeling really good. Like, oh, this is great. This is indie film. It's nice to be able to give indie filmmakers money.
Mm-hmm.
This guy was bootlegging it and happily doing it. We called him out on it in the magazine and it turned into a big, it blew up
really?
Into a big thing where we had a confrontation at some geeky con. It wasn't Comic Con, but something like that, where he tried to pour a beer on me and I deflected it and it landed on the guy who tried to set up the two of us meeting, which turned into like a heated screaming thing. But the guy was wrong. I mean, look, we didn't sue him. We didn't go at all. We did was say, this guy's doing it. Please don't buy his shitty bootleg movies.
Right.
Buy the stuff from us. And it's already gotten even more difficult with the internet to make money. You know, doing stand up, you
mm-hmm.
don't get paid for these gigs. I mean, I've been working out material, building up to. I mean, at the very least, this year I'll put out a comedy CD or something you can download from iTunes.
Okay.
So I know what it's like to sit there and work out material. So I'm. But he did. If he called her a cunt, I'd say, okay, that was too far. Because I've only called a woman a cunt once, and it was when I was breaking up with a girl, and I did not want any chance that we would ever get back together. Because if you use the word cunt, you're closing a door.
Yes.
And I wanted to make sure that it was one of those volatile relationships where we're breaking up and getting back together, breaking up, getting back together. But if you call her a cunt,
it's done deal.
That's the door closer. That was my closer for that girl, was calling her a cunt.
And then he said, thank you, good night.
And so
it is a strong closer.
Right. Patton, obviously he went too far, but I'm kind of on his side. Even hearing all the gory details I've heard the only person who hasn't responded is the girl that actually did it.
Yeah, that's the part that's missed.
But the guy that's in the audience did say it seemed as if she was a person who didn't really regularly go to comedy clubs. Because if you're just a fan and you go see comedy, there are certain etiquette. You know, yeah. you don't heckle, you don't videotape.
Yeah.
You don't even take a conversation or a phone call. You get out of the room. Yeah. You definitely turn your cell phone on. There's a respect, and she just was unaware of it and shouldn't have been at that show, or someone in the audience should have at least. And what Patton described, and this is actually important to know, it wasn't just she was filming with the camera. It had the light on. It had the flash. It was a piercing light in his eye. Yeah. If you like, I went to a comedy show and I saw Marc Maron once.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm going to admit this. I saw Marc Maron at a comedy show. He's a comedy hero of mine. I listen to his podcast. I think Marc Maron's great with WTF. And I've seen him a couple times live. So I'm at this comedy show. And all I was doing was taking a picture. I left my flash on, unbeknownst to me. I normally go to HDR mode.
Okay.
I had it on auto. It flashed. I was so embarrassed. I felt so bad. And he looked right at me, and he made it into a thing. He was great about it. He goes, wait a sec. What? Is my time up? Is that the? And I said, no. And I didn't want to become part of the show. I was apologetic, and I was really, oh God, I was so embarrassed. But so there is an etiquette, and she just clearly didn't know the etiquette. Also, she was a cunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she said, and if you read the blog
for YouTube,
if you read the blogs, it's made. You know, Patton says that she like mouthed "what an asshole," like basically called him an asshole to her friends.
Yeah,
and was like very sarcastic. And like when he said, "Please delete it," she said, "Okay," and then put the phone in her purse. Didn't delete it. Put the phone in her purse.
But here's the only thing here's what I found the most interesting about the whole thing. Barbara Gray's a friend of mine. She's a funny lady. She's a newer comic, you know, she's probably been doing comedy a year or two. So she's very fresh and very wide eyed. And I would imagine from what she said to me in the past and to other people, I think Patton is one of her idols.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously we're talking about something rather monumental from her point of view, which is meeting one of her idols. Where I think Patton went too far, if he went too far, and who gives a fuck what I think, but we're talking about it, is after she left the room, continuing to talk about a woman who's not even in the room. Because honestly, I don't even think saying cunt is too far contextually if she's still in the room being belligerent.
So you're cool with cunt?
I actually am. I'm cool with cunt. Whenever I get some, I love it. It's all good. But if she's
You know a word I don't like when people use the word cunny? Have you ever seen that in like text?
In Westerns.
Oh, yeah. My cunny. What the fuck? She had a dripping cunny.
Well, Clint Eastwood says that in Unforgiven. I hear they even cut up her cunny.
Yeah.
It's very disturbing.
So if she was still in the room participating.
And speaking of people that aren't dripping cunnies, back to Barbara Gray.
Yeah. If the bad person was still in the room, whatever he had to say, well, you shouldn't be doing that, so it's all fair game. She had already left, and then you made it into... And there were other things. If you're just going to talk about how she's... It's ridiculous that she was taping and whatever, but now you're talking about her looks. Now, I read Barbara Gray's thing, and I read Patton Oswalt's thing. Here's the funniest thing to me. Patton Oswalt's response to Barbara Gray was a gracious... You know what? You're right. I went too far. But let me tell you the part of the story you didn't get.
Right.
A very measured, funny, well-written response to what Barbara had written, which was also well-written. They were both well-written, well-explored thoughts. And Patton basically said, you're right, but you don't have the whole story.
That's exactly
Here's the whole
said.
Story. What's funny to me about that is that's all you need to complete the story. Every stupid fanboy of Patton's who he has wonderful fans as well, but he's got these dipshit fans who immediately attacked Barbara for something she didn't say. Like there were a bunch of posts that were like, so you think it's okay to record? No, that's not what she said.
Right. Yeah. Her complaint was about how he handled it. She wasn't defending the recording.
And after Patton's response, she said, thank you to everybody who said some very interesting things, particularly to Patton. The only thing she referenced about Patton's blog was thank you. And she, by the way, stayed judiciously silent after the firestorm started. Like
what's the firestorm? I mean, the whole thing is this. Here's a question.
People attacking her. A bunch of, like, just on Twitter.
And maybe you could... should she even have written about it? I feel like... Maybe she could have written that up as an email and sent it to Patton rather than publicly airing it.
All right, this is where
the question.
This is where I want to jump in because
please,
as far as the incident goes, you know, I consider Patton a friend, and there was a time before he was married and had kids, before I was divorced and sad. There was a time when we would see each other at shows and we would hang out. He lives just down the street, and we would have conversations and talk on the phone, and I've always considered him a friend and a cool guy. And the more you know about Patton, the more you know how this incident, why this happens. You know, he said many times, I was bullied when I was a kid, and then when I achieved a level of fame, I became a bully because of that, and I tried very hard not to, and that's kind of what happened with that. And what I say is, you know, and I tweeted this, you know, is this something that can happen now? Every time somebody you like or somebody you admire does something you don't like, you're going to blog about it and talk about it? Because if that's the case, I got a fucking story for everyone.
Well, yeah.
I told it. I got quite a few. And as a matter of fact, I mean, my question is, and I've asked Barbara to be on the show a number of times, and it has not worked out. She just has been out of town or whatever. But my question is, what is it that made you feel like you had to tell this story, that made you feel, like you said, that made you feel so gross that you had to tell it? And more importantly, and let me read this from Patton's Facebook page. He says, and this is, I'm quoting, he says, no better way to start the weekend than defending your humor to someone who is humorless and trying to be honest and open with someone hiding her calculation and careerism under a faux, adorable quilt of quirky, wide-eyed, whimsical narcissism. Now, clearly he's talking about Barbara there. And I don't know her well enough to know if that's true, but I do know for a fact that her adorable, wide-eyed, whimsical narcissism describes her to a T. Now, I don't know her well enough to know if that's a quilt or faux or any other shit, but the fact that she felt it necessary to blog about it kind of makes me think maybe she saw this as an opening. I'm going to blog about a guy and be a hero, and it's going to start a shit storm, and I'm going to get some press about it.
Well, we'll see. Is it going to be in the LA Times this week? Is it going to be in the Hollywood Reporter? Is it going to blow up that big?
No, no.
I mean, like, but that's the thing. Is like, look, we all have, when you work production, I mean, look. You know, it's stuff gets, having good long hours on TV shows, people have their moments.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody has.
Agreed.
And who cares? That comes with the territory. At the end of the day, hugs and you move on. This is a totally separate thing, but it's something that, you know, if I experienced that, I don't think I would have written about it at all.
Okay, here's
that's I think.
Yeah.
Okay, I know Barbara Gray. I don't think that she's what Patton just described.
She's not adorkable, because that's a pretty good word.
He's saying she's not faux adorkable.
Right. I'm saying I'd rather. Most people would rather be called a cunt than adorkable.
not Zoe Deschanel.
I'm going to try it if I ever meet her.
Okay.
What if she's adorably cunty?
You're a cunt.
You need to be held accountable.
Here's the thing. The Barbara
cunt
Gray that
is today's secret.
The Barbara Gray that I know, I don't see it that way. I do see her as a hard-on-her-sleeve kind of person who blogs. I also see her as a person who very likely was drunk.
You think she was drinking, like, when she decided to post it? Because I've done things like that. At my own expense.
Well, I think Barbara would, not telling tales out of school, she would say this herself. Was it an hour of the day? Probably she was drinking. So I'm just saying she's a very hard on her sleeve kind of person. If you ever have had the pleasure of watching her comedy, it's lovely. Some of it's funny, some of it's not, because she works stuff out, but it's all very earnest and stuff. She doesn't occur to me that way. I think it was probably a mistake to post it. I would agree with that. Like, I'd say, I don't think that was the thing to do, because this shit tends to happen. You're better off keeping it. I didn't even think send it to Patton. I think keep it to your fucking self.
Yes.
That's what I would have done, because that's what I would have done.
And that's what bothers me.
It's not wrong for her to do it.
Maybe it's also like, I'm going to assume that Barbara's a woman. And maybe she took offense at some, because Patton was attacking a woman. It's kind of like, you know, it's like kicking a puppy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, puppy doesn't know that pooping on the floor is wrong, but you're not going to, you know what I'm saying?
Well, I think it had a lot to do with, I'm sure this has happened to all of us, where you see somebody who you idolize, or a woman who you have a crush on.
Oh, we've seen it. Like, people idolize.
And they act shitty.
Yeah.
And it causes, conflicting emotions inside you. You're like, wow, I still have a crush on her, but she just did something really crappy. I don't know what to do with myself now. And that I have a feeling that's what it was. Here's what bothers me the most, is that if, in fact, this is the way that we handle ourselves now, that, you know, when we see somebody acting, you know, improperly or just not on their best behavior, we fucking blog about it, that is fucked up. Because, you know,
I agree wholeheartedly.
If that's the case, you know, I have this story, you know, I was talking to Brooke about it last night, and I said, you know, that happened to me, where, you know, I got berated by a famous person, and I could have, I chose A, not to tell the story, and B, I chose basically,
sure you did.
I never told the story. I never told the whole story. Well, I told you guys.
You told it to Brooke.
Pretty sure we talked about it on the show.
I never told the whole story on the show. Yes.
Okay, because it seems like you did, but if you didn't, okay.
I never told the story from beginning to end what happened. And I said that many times. I don't want to tell the story because, A, it's not interesting, and, B, I look just as bad as anyone else. But the bottom line in the story is Leslie Mann called me a fucking asshole to my face. And that's much worse than seeing Patton Oswalt be mean to a lady
who you don't
even know. And to make matters worse, her husband backed her up on it. Now,
let me ask you this. And I'm being serious, so I want to preface this by saying this because I know I say a lot of stupid crap. Leslie Mann said a thing to you to your face, right?
Yes.
Let's say this happened at the panel, and you'd said the thing, and whatever happened, and you left the room, and then Leslie Mann got on the microphone and goes, "Hey, folks, wasn't that guy a fucking asshole?" And you'd already left. Isn't that worse?
I don't know, because...
Well, he said, I don't know the situation.
Let's stop right now. Cause I had Brooke, tell her account of what happened, which I think gives it more credence. Cause she was there and she recorded it, and I want to play it for you guys and for everybody listening. So here it is. Let me get it up here. I did this purposely so I wasn't the guy telling the story, but so everybody could hear exactly what happened. Because I think people's perceptions of what happened are, well, I'm sure Paul did something to deserve it. I know for a fact that's what people think.
I think that now. Well, and I don't even know what you're talking about.
It's because we know you.
Exactly. And I think people go, ha, 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 Paul did something. And in this case, but even if, you know, even if that's the case, did I really still deserve to be called a fucking asshole and the worst person in the world? Here, you decide. Ah, fuck. I got to play it on something else.
Well, with that buildup, well, first of all, if I could just say, I completely agree with what you said, but I think it all comes down to gossip. I think gossip is always a bad thing. And
unless it's Gossip Girls, and then it's fantastic.
Well, unless it's that show, Gossip Girls. But what I mean is that, you know, just... there's always two sides to every story. In this case, there were three sides because the audience, you've got all their perspectives. And
there might have been
at the end
before,
of the day, none
I understand
of us,
the show was in the round.
And no one in this room was there. So here we are rendering an opinion on something that we've not even experienced.
Right.
So.
Okay.
It's unfortunate for everyone. And I think it just goes to show that one should never gossip.
That's true. I agree with that 100%.
Let's listen to the story and then we can make the conversation about me.
So here's my recollection of the events of that evening. We were at Paley Fest last year, and it was for the Undeclared and Freaks and Geeks reunion. And after watching episodes of the show, they had the panel, which was hosted by Judd Apatow and had, of course, the cast that was there. Undeclared was first, and of course, Paul made it a point to ask questions at all of the panels. So he asked a question during that, and it was funny and went over well. There was a break in between, and then it was the Freaks and Geeks reunion. So Paul wanted to ask a question during that panel as well, and I think Judd Apatow kind of recognized him from the first one, so in an effort to give other people a chance, he kept kind of passing him over, but Paul kept putting up his hand. So eventually he came to him and said, "Oh, okay, let's take one from you." This was towards the end, I think. And when he stood up, the woman beside him, whose presence I wasn't really aware of before that, seemed to be upset, and she started making comments loudly while he was trying to ask his question. And she kept doing that, and he was kind of trying to ignore her and then put her off, and then he was making comments back to her. My impression of that, you know, knowing him, was basically like he would deal with a heckler at a show. But she kept interrupting his question. And finally he said something like, you should hear what she just said about your kids. And that was directed to Judd Apatow. And there was kind of a ooh, you know, or whatever from the panel. And it was really all kind of awkward. And some of the panel people were sort of making comments like, I don't know what's going on down there. And it was a little weird. Anyway, once that was done, Judd Apatow kind of dismissed the question and, you know, passed it off as kind of an awkward moment. And then basically, I can't remember if another question was asked after that, but the panel was over. And it was a little weird, but, you know, like I said, to me, it was just Paul dealing with a heckler. Then we went off into the meet and greet, and that was awesome because, you know, I got to meet some people that Paul knew. He introduced me to some of the cast that he'd met before or knew. We met Seth Rogen, took Paul's picture with him, and that was awesome. I talked about being Canadian and everything. And then we noticed kind of a throng of people at the back of the room, and Paul wanted to go mingle with whoever was back there. I kind of stood aside. I didn't really want to go into the fray or whatever, and I was kind of drinking my drink and eating my snacks and looking at my BlackBerry or whatever. And then I look up, and I see Paul, and I see Leslie Mann screaming in his face. And I couldn't really hear a lot of what was going on except for, you know, who the fuck do you think you are? Various profanities thrown at him, other people talking to him as well, with her, not in a pleasant way. And him looking basically shocked and apologetic. And then I see Judd Apatow kind of get in there, maybe try and get between them, try and pull her away, basically like he's not worth it kind of stuff. And then Paul came out of there just looking shocked, and it was all kind of very strange, and we left shortly thereafter. Now, what he told me afterwards, and that I didn't you know, really see myself, was that, first of all, the woman beside him during the panels was kind of bugging him all night. I guess she had a question too, so she was offended that they picked him over her, and she was just basically being kind of a pain in the ass for the evening. And he also told me what was actually said to him by Leslie Mann, which was that he was the worst person in the world, and how dare he talk about her children. And I guess she had a friend with her that was kind of backing her up and said that, you know, when he responded, you know, apologetically, that he has children himself and he wouldn't want to offend anybody like that. She said, I feel sorry for them, meaning his children. And that was pretty much my impression. I don't think what he did was worthy of someone screaming in his face. I understand she's protective of her children, but I'm not sure why her children were at a panel where they were openly talking about sex on set and other things like that. If they're so precious, I'm not sure why they were there at a very adult gathering, but that's what happened.
Okay, so that is the story from a third person's perspective who was there. Now, I find it funny that if I were anyone else and I were to tell that story, you know, and I wasn't well known, I didn't have my own podcast, if I was just a fan and a dude, and I wrote a blog about that, it would probably get the same response that, you know, Barbara Gray got. But because I am, if I'm famous for anything, it's for being an opinionated, annoying loudmouth. And when I tell my story about how, you know, when Barbara Gray says, man, I saw this thing that Patton did and it really bugged me, everyone goes, are you okay? That's their first response. When I say, hey, Leslie Mann called me a fucking asshole right in my face, everyone says, why? What did you say? And I'm not joking. That's what they do. They don't go, wow, that sucks. That must have hurt your feelings. They go, why? What did you say? And I'm okay with that in the sense that I understand why that happens. But, you know, Judd Apatow is an idol of mine and has been. And I've talked for years how Freaks and Geeks was a seminal moment in television history. And, you know, when he came up at the end of it and he said, that was really fucked up of you. And I said, look, I apologize. I didn't mean to offend anybody. And I don't even know what I said. And I go, I don't even think I said anything. And he says to me, well, you should have just known better not to bring someone's kids into it. And what I wanted to say is, you brought your kid on stage, asshole. You made your kid a part of the show. You're the one who brought your kid into it. But instead, I just said, I'm sorry, I apologize. And he gave me a derisive sneer and whisked his wife away to their zillion-dollar home where they roll around in $100 bills and have sex. So if anyone has something to complain about or a bad story about a celebrity, it's me.
Yeah.
And yet I didn't. I didn't blog about it. I didn't fucking tell the story. It's here now a year later that I'm finally telling the facts of what happened.
But you know, you did just tell it, though. You didn't blog about it.
Well, and this is the main reason I did this was because people said, I've had people say to me, this is now the time to tell that story.
Can I just make an observation that I find interesting?
Yes.
I don't know if there's a point to this other than, from my perspective of having heard the story from you a couple times, when it just happened, when it was fresh for you, when you first told me about it,
yes,
you were pretty understanding about, you understood that some kind of misunderstanding had taken place.
Yeah.
You understood that she thought she was protecting her kids,
mm-hmm,
and hadn't completely understood what happened. You were actually sympathetic to Leslie Mann the first time you told me the story.
Well,
every time you've told it since then, you've gotten more and more angry.
Right. Because here's the thing, and again, I've had a year now.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're going Patton Oswalt on this.
I've had a year now to live with this story, because when it happened, all I could think was, oh, because put yourself in my shoes. I was at the Freaks and Geeks reunion at the Paley Festival backstage. It was a big deal for me.
Yeah,
I'm sure. For this to happen was pretty devastating. So the way I had to cope with it was to try to make sense of it. What did I do? And I don't know for a fact that I did something or said something. And all I could do was try to manufacture a reason why she would be so upset. And I mean, obviously it had something to do with her being protective of her kids, which everybody is. I get that. I don't think that's a reason to yell you're a fucking asshole in someone's face, but I get it. However, in the meantime, between then and now, I have asked people who were on that panel, who were present at the time, for instance, Steve Banos, who has been a guest on the show, and people who were there in the audience, and I said, hey, do you remember when I asked that question? What was she so upset about? And they all
said, what was the question?
Well, it was just what Brooke said. I just asked a question, but this woman...
What was the question?
Oh, the question was just... It had nothing to do with anything.
But what was the question?
The question was, the question was basically, hey, Judd Apatow, I remember when you were a young comedian starting out, you came to my college and made face farts. Can you do that for us again? It had nothing.
That's all you said?
But it had nothing to do with that. That's completely beside the point. This woman next to me kept talking and giving me shit, and I was trying to basically shut her down. And at one point, and then Judge...
Was she giving you shit because you were asking too many questions?
I don't know why. I honestly don't know what her problem was. But Judge said, who's that woman next to you? And I go, I don't know. And he goes, are you with her? And I go, no, she's a stranger who won't shut up while I'm trying to ask my question.
You've been to those panels with celebrities before,
yes,
especially at Comic-Con. It brings out the crazies. It brings out...
She was just an annoying cunt. She really was. But the bottom line is...
For you guys.
Yeah. But then I said...
Is Leslie Mann a cunt?
She was to me that night. I don't know her well enough. But then I said, just like Brooke said in the story, I said as a joke, hey, you should have heard what she said about your kid. Because Judd had mentioned earlier to people, anytime someone would bring up sex or say something about drugs or whatever, he'd go, hey, my daughter's here. Because she came out and introduced the evening, their daughter, April, or whatever her name is.
But the content of Judd Apatow's, whether it's his film or television, It's very sexual in nature. I wouldn't bring a young child. It wouldn't bring a
I was kind of playing in with that, like, hey, you should have heard what you said about your kid, because you were talking about your kid earlier. Now, and that's the only thing I could think of that she took offense to, me saying, right. Well, you should have heard what I said about your kid.
It was a big misunderstanding is what it was, and well, she got worked up.
I think that's what it was.
She got into, like, yes. Mother defense mode.
Exactly.
You cannot, there's no reasoning. Look, we've all tried to have conversations.
But here's the problem.
When they're pissed... When they are pissed, it's like raise shields.
Yes.
Reason, go away.
And I've gotten that same way about my kids as a father.
At me.
I'm fine.
Boom, boom.
But the fact that
reason torpedoes.
But the fact that she came up to a total stranger and did that and felt that it was okay. What if I walked up to her on the street and yelled in her face, "You're a fucking asshole"? I'd probably be arrested for assaulting her because she's a woman and she's famous. That's my point is, regardless of what happened, it wasn't okay.
Well, just like it wasn't okay
for Patton to make fun of this woman for being ugly.
After she left. And let's, first of all,
it wasn't okay for her to yell in my face, "You're a fucking asshole," and for her friend to say, "You're the worst person." And remember, this is when Gaddafi was still alive. She said, "You're the worst person in the world to me."
Well, let's just also add to that with regard to Patton and you. Both of you, I think, were named Sexiest Man Alive by Hobbit Magazine. So
a couple things. You're right. She shouldn't have said that to you. That's absolutely true, just to acknowledge that. And in retrospect, if we had to do it all over again, you should have just told the story the first time, because you've been telling it ever since, a little bit at a time, and this is better, to just tell the story. And so, what I'm saying is, I think it's probably good that Barbara Gray got it off her chest.
Well, also, don't take...
That's a good point.
Because I think Barbara Gray saw this thing that upset her. And by the way, what I'm defending Barbara Gray for isn't the thing between her and Patton. It's the fucking shitball fanboys who have their dumb opinion.
Yeah.
Because they're fucked.
No one else who has a comment about this matters.
Whatever
this
Patton is all about,
including
Barbara
us.
Patton. Yes, yeah, including
us. No, absolutely. But what I'm saying is, the things Patton wants to say about Barbara Gray, go nuts, because that's between you two guys. That's great. And Barbara Gray, he's very famous, and he'll probably win. Oh, sucks, but whatever. Yeah. She'll be fine, because she is funny. She's got a fine sense of humor, and there's always booze. But and you might as well tell the story, because in retrospect, I don't think everybody should tell every story, and if it were me, I wouldn't have. But if it was on her mind as much as this shit was on your mind, it's probably better to just tell it.
Good point.
Or write it down and put it in a notebook and just, like, close it and never think about it. There is a thing of, like, it has to be sort of complete in your mind to let it go. Also, just a quick...
Yeah, but
to be honest, hearing all the gory details of that story, it got a little boring, kind of like, someone just got... But, like... Make it funnier. If you're going to... Dude, you put it in the notebook. Do the funny version. At least do it funny.
Now that, I agree with 100%.
Because I think you could turn it into a comedy bit.
Because how many times have
you
been
really
in a show...
You can really make it funny.
How many times have you been on a show where someone did something fucked and you were lucky enough to go on after them and you made a comment about
Absolutely,
it?
Absolutely, yeah.
I think you could turn it... You could turn it into a bit. You could talk about how... Yep. I always think it's funnier to, like, turn something around on someone else. If someone's being an asshole, I'm always really nice to them. Let's say we live in Los Angeles, which this is, and I've seen it on the internet. It's a fact. Highest concentration of assholes live in Los Angeles.
I'll give you a perfect example of something. There was a dude, I did a show not too long ago where the first comic, the host was this black guy, and he was the only black guy in the room. So the first comic.
Was he laughing? Did you look at him?
I looked at him, yeah. And the first comic said, the black guy did some riffing with some people in the audience, some women and some men in the audience. He was just talking to people in the audience. But he was just talking to people in the audience the way that you'll do as a comic. The first comic goes, black comic trying to score some white pussy.
Whoa, not cool.
So nobody was down with that at all. Nobody was down with that because why would you be down with that?
Right.
And then at some point during his set, he goes, I wish I didn't have to go first. So then later on, I was up and I go, so let me get this straight. Your impression is, oh, man, I wish I didn't have to go first, because if I was third, racism is so great. Third. Yeah. What number did you think was going to be great where you were just going to kill? And so it was, I liked that he had said that because I got a good 4 minutes from him.
One time I did a show at the Meltdown, and there was one black guy in the crowd who was right up front. And I thought, oh, there's one black nerd here. That's interesting. Because it was a Tom Frank show.
What did you say to Donald Glover?
But when I got up, he had gone to the bathroom or something. And I went, hey, what happened to the black guy who was sitting here? Not enough Luke Cage material? Fucking killed! It killed! Everybody laughed!
Well, you could have made a Captain America and the Falcon joke, too. There you go.
I should have said the Falcon. I don't know. What's the go-to reference? The Falcon, Black Panther,
I think Luke Cage. I think Luke Cage is better. Okay. Black Panther has the word black in it, so there you
That's
go.
That's true. You know, Hulk calls a Black Panther the black man. That's kind of racist.
The three black Marvel superheroes. Back in the era when all superheroes who were black, they put black in the title.
Now, here's my question. Oh,
Black Lightning. Well, the Black Flash. Right. He's the black. That's what they would actually put black in the name of the fucking superhero.
Black Superman. Here's my question. God. When the Hulk is calling people, you know, Bug Man or, you know, Metal Man, and he calls Black Panther Black Man because he's wearing, and then Black Panther pulls off his hood, and you see he is a black guy, does the Hulk go, oh, whoa, whoa, I'm sorry, I didn't know. I was just because you...
Hulk not mean anything by it.
Hulk not mean Hulk just because you wear black suits.
Some of Hulk's best friends are black.
Look, Hulk Green, you know, it's okay. I can say that. Hulk can say that. Hulk Green, Hulk like you.
They're both colored.
All right, well, I'm glad I got that off my chest, and hopefully Barbara will be here, and we'll ask her, and then we'll say, you know...
And Patton, what the fuck? A neighbor of yours, Patton Oswalt.
Oh, I've asked him to be on a show a number of times, and he's been nice enough to say no. Unlike
well, at least he gives you a direct
that's
answer.
What I'm saying. Unlike most people who just ignore me, he's been nice enough to say, no, sorry, I'm too busy. Or, no, I don't want to, which is even better. I've asked people, you know, the most response I get is just being ignored. But there have been so many great answers I've gotten. Like, I asked Evan Handler to be on the show, and he said, I have absolutely nothing to promote right now, so no. I thought, oh, that's a good answer. Okay, and he probably
but that could,
never
that could
it.
You could turn that into a yes.
Well, he's back on Californication starting tonight, as a matter of fact. All right, I don't have anything else to say about this topic or any other topic. Do you guys have any other shit you want to talk about?
This is something that actually happened that seems slightly germane.
Okay.
Because of what we've been talking about.
But wait, it happened to you?
I swear to God, I witnessed this. When I was back in Phoenix over the holidays, I went and saw our friend Brian McNett do an open mic, and there was a guy there. And when he was performing, he actually at one point paused and said to a woman up front, I swear to God, this is not a bit. This actually happened. Are you filming me? Please don't do that. I've been on Comedy Central. So I actually saw that exact thing, but it did not become a thing.
Did she stopped?
I guess. He just went on. But it was very awkward. Now, so I can imagine being in the room for that times 100, how uncomfortable that might have been.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
The sad part is when something like that happens, you have to talk about it or else just stop the show and restart it. You have to go, hey, I know it's weird in here. Let's all take a break. Let's all take five and we'll start the show over.
And that actually could clear the air. At least people could discuss
it.
Or it's hanging in the room. You got to talk about if there's an elephant in the room, you have to point it out.
I did this show at Michael's a couple weeks ago. It's called Comics and a Side of Five Comics and a Side of Fries, whatever. And it's a show I've done before, and this one was really good. It was me, Scott Boxenbaum, John Huck, and some really funny people on the show, and I had a great time. I said, this one guy who got up, he said, today is the 5-year anniversary to the day of me doing stand-up comedy. And everybody clapped. And when I got up, I said, you know, much like Bob, I have an anniversary. Today is the 5-year anniversary of me telling myself, if this doesn't work out by Christmas, I'll get out of the business. But it was a fun show.
That's a good laugh, right?
Yes, it was a big hit. I got new bits out of it. It's a great show. This guy, Dr. David Robinson, hosts it, and it's a fun show. And once a week, Geekscape takes over, and they do it. But at one point during this girl's set, these drunk dudes came in to like use the bathroom and kind of hang out. And the bartender saw that and was like trying to get them saying, you guys can't come in here. You're drunk already. Get the fuck out. And it got kind of loud. And it was obvious. It was distracting. So eventually she went, hey, guys, what's going on? And she talked to them and was like, they're friends of mine. It's okay. And it was obvious she was joking. And I thought, that's what you have to do.
But I feel like it's funny. Like, if you're doing a room that where, like, it depends on the room also, where you can hear the, like, the bartender actually ringing up tabs.
Oh,
or
yeah.
Someone orders a blended margarita. Yep. And you hear the whir of... of the blender. It's just, it's so.
You just have to deal with it.
I mean, but these are all small places. They're, you know what I mean? They're sort of, they're not necessarily made for stand-up comedy.
I will say this about, you know, what Patton said about Barbara. You know, the one thing that about comedians that I hate the most is people who pretend to be, like, it's one thing if you're doing a character, if you're Paul Rubens doing Pee-wee Herman. Well, obviously we know Pee-wee Herman is not a real guy who does not exist. But if you're a person who pretends to be something on stage that you are not, I cannot fucking stand it. Because speaking for myself and Jim and even Chris, who I've never seen do stand-up.
You should, okay, let's do a show together.
When are we doing it?
It's on! Challenge.
I know for a fact that we all are no different on stage than we are in our real lives.
Yeah, Paul is unbearably unfunny.
Except I probably say the word cunt more, but than in my
but
real
like,
life.
There's this woman, her name was Renee something, and she was black, and she shaved her head. And she used to go on stage and do this thing about how she likes to go shopping for a bunch of hair care products and then get up to the register and go, "What was I thinking?" And she would get a big laugh. And she would talk about people, how real she is, and this is me, I'm real, and whatever. And then off stage, of course, she was nothing like that. She shaved her head for one bit, and she wasn't real at all. And I fucking
I do despise that as well. And I'm often very disappointed when that happens. There's a comic I know who does that. I'm not going to say the name because it's a current comic and a friend, but they do. So
you have former friend. But you have a videotape of them that you're going to put on YouTube.
Upload. Yeah, she asked me not to. And I said, "No problem." And I crammed the little thing in my pocket. And I said, "I'll definitely do that." And then I was like, "You fucking cunt! You're a fucking..." And then there's a person in back who's a fan of this girl.
Right.
Very disappointed in her. And then when I got up, I fucking was like, "I'll see you. Have a great show." I'm flipping the bird. I was not cool. You're right. I think at one point I threw a drink on the stage.
Okay.
But you know what? Fuck that chick. Uploading that video. All
right. So you're saying you were in the right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Oh, I just wanted to say this, too, about the Patton thing really quick.
Yes.
If you read his blog, he makes an incredibly good point about putting something in context, understanding how many fucking times this has happened specifically
right.
to him.
Yeah, yeah.
Because all the shit where somebody has taped a special, 10 minutes of a special that he's going to be releasing comes out ahead of time because some dillweed is in the audience, and then, of course, the notorious guy does his act.
You're
thing.
Right. That's happened twice. One guy giving his commencement speech at his college does a bit. Have you seen that video?
I heard about that.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
The thing. Even all of that considered, you have to just understand that this is just one more fucking person. And maybe they're not the worst of the lot. They're definitely not the worst of the lot. But you know what? The line you're in is the line you shouldn't be in.
Also, for some reason, Patton seems to be a lightning rod for plagiarism. Because I remember when Sarah Palin like gave some speech a long time ago. It was shortly after she quit being a governor. She quoted from this book that was a biography of General George S. Patton. She basically lifted right from that guy's fucking thing. Did something happen here?
No, I think we're fine. It's something up there.
Oh, okay.
Someone ordered a mixed murder.
She lifted directly from this book that this guy wrote about Patton. And of course, Patton Oswalt, who was named for George S. Patton, he actually was named for Patton.
I know.
He knew, because he had read this book, he knew that. And he basically blogged about it and said, "Yeah, Sarah Palin stole from this guy who wrote a book about me. Oh, and by the way, there's this dude who did a commencement speech who used my material in his speech." It all happened like within a week of each other.
It's a sore point with comedians is stealing jokes
and
material.
And let me say this to people out there listening. If you want comedians to perform for you, don't fucking do that. Because there are a lot of good comedians who don't perform anymore. Fred Stoller will not do stand-up anymore, particularly because of headaches just like this. And there are plenty of comedians who refuse to perform live anymore because of shit like this.
Like Kenny Youngman won't perform live anymore.
Well, he's dead. He'll perform dead.
That's how far he went.
He'll perform dead. Well, he was tired of seeing the Take My Wife bit on YouTube. All right, let's fucking move along. We got a party to go to. Jim, you want to do your mashup?
We'll sure, do you know the mashup?
You probably remember it from last time you were on the show. Jim's going to take two bad impressions and mash them together, and we have to figure out what it is.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Jabba, I know you're angry, but I have come to bargain for Han Solo's life. I've also come to offer you a full girlfriend experience for $200. For $300, Jabba, I will let you go Greek. For $400, you get me the entire night.
I don't like this at all.
Yeah, me neither.
I know it.
So
you know
mighty
it?
Jabba, yeah. If you'd like to climb on top of me with that weird, slick, greasy dick and put it in my asshole.
No.
But I also want to plead for Solo's life.
Yeah, while you're there, sure. I hate this.
Done. Courtesy of Spiegelman.
Oh, this is Spiegelman's idea. Yeah. Okay.
Well, obviously it's Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker.
One, right.
And then the other one is... It's got to be... What's that Soderbergh movie? Who was in it? The Girlfriend Experience.
You're thinking it's the Jedi Experience?
The Jedi
Experience. No, it's much simpler. I think it's Luke Streetwalker.
That's right.
Oh, that's good!
No, it's not. It's bad. Luke Streetwalker.
Oh, dear.
Oh, certainly unpleasant.
Fuck you, Spiegelman. Terrible. All right. Well, that is the show. If you liked it, you can listen to it again on Chris's podcast. Of course, Podcrash is where you go to listen to that. Follow us on Twitter at Paul Goble Show, at Comic Jim Bruce, at That Tom Griffin, and at That Chris Gore. And of course, go to Jim's blog, The Conspiracy Nut, and read about all the conspiracies. And, John Fogerty is on The Finder this week, the real John Fogerty. So hopefully I'll do an interview with him about that and have that up on realrockmusic.com. And if you are filming me at a show, all I will say to you is go fuck yourself.